Raskalov je Ankara, Ankara. When you chucky E, your army B.
Get money, money, make money, money, money. Welcome, Kwanza, Kwanza, Meza, Nindo, Kisha, Nijane, Kisha. Nobody come a VP, Pisha, Wone. Pumzi, Dogo, Ruchi, Jofu, Wame, Kwisha, Kamisa, Homie. Janja, Kama, Gombali, Sabari, Ye, Dem. Zimim, Kwanza, Wone, Palivo, Patam, Kwan. Wat, na, Figa, Kaz, Wat, Chonky, Chucky, Makun, Zappa, Kuna, Mapen, Zappa, Dos, na, Kaz. Chapa, Mzigo, Pinga, Bingo, Bongo, Baka, Masao, Zitu, Mezar, Siyo, Kama, Jara, na, Jun. Yeah, why is China, H? Kuyuma wana bisho kwa na gaga kichek tunavyuma. I wanna know kina kitu kina keep it on. Maybe it is yours so tupo nyingine episode. AYFA tunapiga rough target a roll. Chill somebody in Italy blah 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 blah. Nami B, Saluti, Kali Ki, Kanya Ki, Nami Ni, Kamer B, OC, AL, Kali. Baka U to the G, Gama Ki. Nyawa baka sebo ori wa min nafanya E, yo.
Ha, ha, habari ndio hiyo. Ha, ha, habari ndio hiyo. Ha, ha, habari ndio hiyo.
Welcome to CHRY 105.5 FM. You're listening to African Perspectives, and I'm your host for today, Amil Shivji. Sorry for the delay. There were some technical difficulties. We'll go straight into our first song for today, which is a Ugandan song called Nasema Now by Josie Chameleon and featuring AY. And when we come back from the ad break, we'll be listening to Sintim Zekele, who will be talking about the foreign intervention in Libya and the protests going on.
Now, I wanna wear a mini, a mini, see no bad, I'll meet a
Welcome back to CHRY 105.5 FM. You're listening to African Perspectives. And today we're here with Eleni Sentim Zeleke, who is a Ethiopian part-time lecturer in African Studies at York University. Hello, Sentim.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Good, good.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I guess we can start with the basics. What is your personal take on Colonel Muammar Gaddafi?
My personal take?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't realize we were discussing such controversial things. Gaddafi is a complicated person. I think the situation in Libya is really complicated.
Yeah.
As somebody who grew up in the third world, I remember having a copy of the Green Book in my family's house. This is the manifesto of Gaddafi's revolution. And there was a sense in which we supported Gaddafi because he was seen as a progressive within a kind of third world context, advocating policies that would actually benefit regular people in Libya and within the third world more generally. I think that his regime actually did achieve certain things. For instance, providing, sort of universal health care to people, increasing life expectancy, decreasing, child mortality. I think these are real markers of achievement. And one needs to remember that Libya was one of the poorest countries in the world in the 1950s. So there has been dramatic shifts in terms of, conditions of life in Libya, which isn't to say that he isn't a dictator, which isn't to say that life is organized through networks that, mobilize, certain kinds of identities and, also mobilize things like racism and so on in order to keep the system going. And, of course, the regime has changed over the years so that, Gaddafi has and his crew have become much more dictatorial in nature. But, I think that Gaddafi's regime was, particularly in its earlier form, was part of a larger third world project that was about connecting the needs of local people to the national level and trying to secure national sovereignty against sort of imperial policies, including economic policies, so that people's needs could be satisfied. We all know that third world countries have a hard time satisfying the needs of their people precisely because economic policies tend to favor just, small groups of elites within the third world context. And I think, Gaddafi's regime in many ways tried to battle with that. The problem often in trying to battle with that kind of context is that in order to achieve some kind of social consensus around these sorts of economic policies, regimes become dictatorial. And because there's always, groups within these countries that, want actually benefit from lopsided economic policies. And so, trying to build that social consensus in order to, have these broader types of economic policies paradoxically leads to more entrenching of dictatorships. And I think that's a central contradiction in many, many third world contexts. It was also the contradiction even in Nasser's regime in Egypt after he had his, revolution in 1952. So, I think that central contradiction needs to be addressed if we want to think about how to improve the situation in Libya. And it's something that's really been off the table in discussions about Libya. So we just have this discussion about Gaddafi and Libya as if we can talk about it in terms of metaphors of good and evil. So Gaddafi just becomes evil and then everything else that opposes him is good, which is not necessarily true. We need to think about Gaddafi as expressing a central contradiction that is common to many third world countries. So I guess that's my personal take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks. Because as you mentioned, Libya was a poor country, and when Gaddafi came, it now has like a GNP per capita of between $2,000 and $6,000 US dollars. So what exactly is this anti-Gaddafi forces? What are they fighting for? What is the revolution about?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that there is necessarily a revolution. There's definitely a social revolt going on in Libya. There's always been opposition to Gaddafi, you know, by a number of different people, but the East has definitely been opposed to Gaddafi precisely because King Idris's base was in the east of Libya. So when Gaddafi himself had his sort of, you know, military-led revolution, it was against a king, it was against a monarchy. And obviously, when you depose somebody, I mean, kings also have their social base as well, right? And so there's always been opposition to Gaddafi in that sense. I think there's opposition to Gaddafi because he has ruled in a dictatorial fashion. The problem is that often when people are fighting against dictatorship, they articulate it in terms of, you know, wanting liberal democracy and so on, without really thinking about, you know, the kinds of policies that they really want to implement. So I'm not sure that the opposition in Libya has a clear sense of what they want, except that, you know, they think that liberal democracy will bring them more freedom. So most of the rhetoric that's been coming out of the opposition is just simply about deposing a dictator without thinking again about the sort of, you know, social and political and economic context in which third world countries have to survive and operate. So yeah, I mean, I think that the central demand is just about getting rid of a dictator without really, again, putting that dictator within a context of trying to support a project that goes against, you know, liberal economic policies that actually are about depriving regular people from access to things like healthcare and so on, education, you know, and a better distribution of wealth in that society. So does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
There's been an article going around the internet by a Libyan author, and mm-hmm. he has suggested that the, you know, so-called revolution isn't between pro-Gaddafi, pro-democracy versus anti-democracy, but rather it is a pan-Arabist versus pan-Africanist revolt, and mm-hmm. while Gaddafi being on the pan-Africanist side. And I know that you've written an article that was published on Pambazooka, I think it was titled The Problem with African and Arab, mm-hmm. and I was wondering if you could connect the two and discuss a little bit about pan-Arabism, if it is, versus pan-Africanism.
Right. I mean, I think the article that you're talking about is by Gerald, I'm not sure what his
Gerald
last
Pereira,
name.
Gerald Pereira, yeah.
Right. I think that article is a little bit over the top, if I say so. I think it raises good points about the legacy of Gaddafi. But I think even Gaddafi's role within the African context, the broader African context, is very ambivalent. So he tried to take over the AU, and he tried to do that in the AU meaning the African Union. And he tried to even move the headquarters of the African Union from Addis Ababa to Tripoli or to Libya. And, you know, he tried to make that move from Addis Ababa to Libya. And the way he attempted to take over the African Union was actually, you know, a lot of people were opposed to it. A lot of other African heads of states were opposed to it. And they felt that he was being, let's say, dictatorial in his maneuvers. So, and of course, Gaddafi has funded a lot of rebel groups in Africa, some of which have been, you know, progressive, some of which have not been particularly progressive. So I think to just blindly call Gaddafi a kind of pan-Africanist without thinking about this, you know, double legacy or this ambivalent legacy kind of misses the point. And, of course, one of the things that Gaddafi did when he wasn't getting anywhere in the African Union with the other heads of states, he sort of tried to bypass a lot of these heads of states and this, you know, traditional kings and chiefs and so on. and saying that these people are the legitimate heirs of, you know, the African state. And so a lot of those, he would invite those kings and chiefs to Addis Ababa to participate in the African Union delegation, but many of them were not invited there by their own country, you know, heads of states and so on. So I think, Gerald's kind of overlooking some of the
And we are back. Sorry about that. There seems to have some problems with the telephone lines. But Santima, are you there?
I'm there.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so,
Should I carry on with what I was saying before?
Please continue.
Okay. So, yeah, again, I think that Gaddafi's record in the rest of Libya is ambivalent at best. At the same time, Gaddafi, you know, because of the oil that they have there and so on, a lot of Africans have been working in Libya as migrant workers. One of the things that's really interesting about the opposition is that they have been very anti-immigrant or anti-migrant worker. And in trying to oppose Gaddafi, they've also opposed his ideas around Pan-Africanism and locating Libya within Africa. So one of the things that they've been doing is actually rounding up a lot of migrant workers and people who they identify as, you know, sort of black people who don't belong, according to them, in Libya and who they see as simply Gaddafi supporters, right? You know, and it is very much a systematic racist attack on people. You know, wars bring lots of horrible activities, you know, murder, rape, these kinds of things. But one of the things we can say is that the opposition has been systematically attacking, you know, people that they identify as black people. And in fact, the LA Times recently ran an article about how the transitional government, or, you know, what is being identified as a transitional government and recognized by countries like France, this transitional government organized a tour of the prisons in Libya, and it was supposed to be a tour where journalists and so on could see all the, you know, political prisoners or the people that the mercenaries that the opposition had rounded up. And all of these people were of African descent, you know, again, black people. And, you know, they were supposed to be pro-Gaddafi supporters and so on. You know, it's really clear that many of them were just migrant workers and so on, and that the, you know, opposition had just sort of rounded up people in a very arbitrary fashion. So, again, it really, I mean, I think racism has been at the heart of this conflict, not so much because this is a pan-Arabist versus a pan-African thing. I think that a lot of this opposition is quite conservative. And it, I think it goes to show you as well that this is not about a kind of systematic, progressive, you know, well-organized opposition here. It's one that's really playing on people's fears and so on in order to win its victories. I personally don't think that Pan-Arabism needs to be put in opposition to Pan-Africanism. Certainly, in the early days of Pan-Africanism and Pan-Arabism, these things were articulated together as part of an anti-colonial project. So Nasser's Pan-Arabism or Nkrumah's Pan-Africanism were, you know, these people thought of themselves as working together to build, you know, both regional entities and national entities that could actually, again, stand up to sort of Western imperial powers. And again, so that's part of that third world project that I was talking about, of which Pan-Africanism and Pan-Arabism are some of the, you know, key expressions of that third world project. Yeah.
And what of the foreign intervention?
Sorry?
The foreign intervention right now?
Mm-hmm.
What
the foreign intervention. Yeah. Okay, go on.
I mean, this is being cheered on by the opposition in Libya, but it really isn't being cheered on by other people like the international community. And more of the left, the progressive side, have condemned the foreign intervention.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that for the progressive left, at least the Anglophone progressive left, has been very split on whether they support the intervention. Certainly people like Gilbert Ashkar, who's one of the leading sort of writers on the Middle East, is actually from the left, has supported the no-fly zone, which is very, very surprising. And he says that we have to support it as a kind of compromise with imperialism, because, you know, Gaddafi was going to, you know, kill lots of people and so on. My personal take on this whole situation is that, you know, 2 months ago there was no organized, you know, insurgency in Libya. You know, this is unlike the case in both Tunisia and Egypt, where you had long-term organizing and building up a political consciousness. So, I mean, a lot of people have talked about the revolutions there as, you know, spontaneous and so on, but I don't really think that's the case. Most of those revolutions actually come out of years of work and political organizing. So in Libya, you have a very different situation where you don't have a kind of organized opposition or an organized insurgency. You have people, you know, who have sort of generally been opposed to Gaddafi for whatever reason, seeing this kind of Arab revolution or whatever, this Arab Spring, as the media likes to call it, and they're like, hey, you know, we can throw down some revolution too. But what they mean by that is just sort of an anti-Gaddafi revolt. You know, and they were not really willing to do the kind of work it takes to have a true, you know, local revolt, partly because I don't think they had the social base. So instead of really organizing their people and figuring out what their needs are and how do you connect those needs to, you know, political policies and so on, they're like, hey, man, there's, you know, some kind of revolutionary fever. We can get the West to support us. Or in fact, the West went to Libya and identified, you know, some small elements of opposition and said, hey, given this situation, you guys go on, we'll support you. Throw down a revolt, you'll get, you know, public support, Western public support for this. Who knows exactly what went down, but clearly it wasn't about an organized, you know, deeply rooted opposition. And so instead of organizing, you know, their people, they call for sort of Western military intervention. And I think that's so. So of course, you know, when a government is feeling aggrieved, you know, and so on, they're going to fight back. So I my sense is that we in the West escalated a situation that became a war situation, and then we need to think about, you know, this intervention as being set up so that we can intervene. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what happened, because the Western powers that intervened, calling for, you know, Gaddafi cannot kill innocent civilians, they have their own imperialist agenda at hand. I mean, mm-hmm. BP has been and is continuing to drill in Libyan waters as we speak
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm. And most of, you know, the Italian oil actually comes from Libya and so on. But it's definitely about oil. It's about Libya's strategic place in the world, etc. But it's also, you know, the West has had a beef with Gaddafi for a long time, and they're like, you know, it's time to take some action. We can finally, in this context of all kinds of social revolts, I feel like the West is like, we it will seem legitimate for us to take out Gaddafi at this particular moment, right?
Yeah, there have mm-hmm. been calls for the the other left camp that says that the African Union should be involved, militarily speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But the African Union has left their tongues numb until recent calls condemning the intervention. What role do you think the African Union should play now?
Well, I think that Museveni, who is the head of state of Uganda, recently issued a statement in the journal Foreign Policy. You can find it online, his statement. And it's a very interesting statement, or in fact, it's a kind of opinion piece about Gaddafi, and it's called The Good, the Bad, and the Gaddafi That I Know. And it really goes through the kinds of points that we've been discussing. So, you know, what has been good about Gaddafi, you know, in terms of promoting, you know, third world nationalism, et cetera, but also, you know, the kinds of mistakes that Gaddafi has made. And you know, what Museveni has been calling for, you know, the AU then to actually get, you know, the opposition and the various sectors of Libyan society to sit down with Gaddafi and actually work some kind of solution out here. I personally think that the AU has been a bit late, you know, in calling for this. They should have done this when all, you know, these events started to unfold. So I'm not sure, you know, what can happen now. You know, we do have a war situation where things have been reduced to a zero-sum game, where it appears that one side has to win, and so on. It would be nice if the West did actually pull out, and then we can, you know, identify who the various members of the opposition are and get some kind of dialogue going between various members of the opposition and the, you know, government in power. And we'll see if the AU and Museveni can pull this off. But I have a feeling that at this point we're in a zero-sum game situation. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Santim. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Would you like to add anything else regarding Libya?
No, I think that's about it for now.
That's it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And if my listeners here should be, if they're interested, they should join the course, African Studies, right, at York University?
Or they can email me.
Or they could email you.
At Santim, Centime, at yorku.ca.
Thank you so much, Santim, for coming on the show.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Bye.
Li nek ci sama souf ak sigine.